The views and opinions expressed in the Humanizing the Headset podcast are those of the authors, guests, and hosts of the podcast, and do not necessarily reflect the opinion or position of Humanizing the Headset as a whole. This podcast may contain adult language and adult content.
And we're back.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. The cat just finished using the litter box, so I'm glad that's done.
It'll be a nice soundbite for later.
Officially have the room to yourself now.
He's like, I'm not dealing with this shit.
Right, exactly.
Dad jokes for days.
Oh, gosh. Anyway. Well, welcome back, everyone. I don't know what number episode this is. I think it's either 17 or 18.
I think it's 18.
Okay.
Are we taking bets? All right. I say 17. Brendan says 18.
Well, because we know.
Well, we haven't published the other one yet.
Yeah, there's another one that we.
So.
Oh, I see. So you're hedging your bets. You're going to be like, oh, make it this one, Norm, so that you win. I see how it works.
Anyway.
Yes.
We have a guest with us today. We have Brian, and I'm sorry. I can never say your last name correctly.
Can I take a stab at, is it Tegmeyer?
Tegmeyer.
Okay.
Not how it's spelled. The kill with confidence, like any good telecommunicator, right? Just
common say spelling.
It like that's how you say it. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm in this mode for our subject matter today, which is Turt, and I see your name, and I want to say Turtmeyer.
Yeah, well, that would be wrong. Let's not go there.
Not Turtmeyer. Okay, we will.
No, it is not.
Definitely not say that.
If you want to go change it real quick, that would be cool.
This would
be easier for us.
So Brian wears a few different hats, and I will let you explain what those are, Brian, and why we have you here today.
In my entire world?
Yes.
All the hats, yeah. So I'm the director of DUCOM, DuPage Public Safety Communications, located in Wheaton, Illinois. I've been the director here for 15 years. We're a large consolidated center serving a whole bunch of police and fire agencies. That's my daytime, you know, regular gig. In addition to that, what we're talking about today, I'm currently the president of Illinois TURT. Been involved with Illinois TURT since its inception, and we'll get more into that later, I'm sure. And then I got like two more things. I'm an adjunct instructor at the College of DuPage, teaching a basic telecommunicator course that's open to anyone who wants to learn about the field and the position of 911 telecommunicator. There are similar programs in other community colleges in the Chicago area, but that's the one I'm involved with. And then finally, I'm pretty active in NENA, the National Emergency Number Association, and provide a lot of training. I sit on the Education Advisory Board for NENA, which develops training classes and oversees our training program. But I also am an instructor for over 8 of our offerings, including CTO, our CTO course, as well as the Center Manager Certification Program. So lots of different things keep me busy.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a lot going on. How do you keep all of that straight all the time?
I don't. I really.
You're like, I'm a mess.
Yeah. Some hits, sometimes I get it right. Other times I don't. I have at least made sure I started limiting it to just this. I've sort of, you know, trying to end other volunteer stuff and things like that. But a little easier as the kids get older.
We do thrive in chaos, right? So
right.
I think that's where we all live.
Yeah.
So yeah, we wanted to have you on to talk about TURT because I'm very well aware of what TURT does. I'm a TURT member. And every time I've brought it up on the page, we always get some questions from people who have never heard of it, have no idea what it is. And it's such a wonderful program. I wanted to make sure that we were able to highlight all of the great things that TURT does. So like I said, we kind of had compiled this list of questions. We had a ton of questions from people about what TURT does exactly. We'll try to kind of whittle that down a little bit, but just to get started, so what is TURT?
Sure. TERT stands for, it's a great acronym.
Yes, someone was not happy about that.
Yeah, I don't have the history of exactly where the acronym came for, but its meaning is the Telecommunicator Emergency Response Task Force. And what we are is, simply put, we're mutual aid for telecommunicators. So the most simple answer is, just like, you know, we have police mutual aid, backing up officers, cross jurisdictions, it's 911 mutual aid. It's how we get a 911 telecommunicator from one center to another center. How it works does vary on a state-by-state basis around our country. It's sort of set up on a state level. It's not like a national thing, although we'll talk about, I'm sure at some point, there is a national committee. But it is set up in a state-by-state basis. And my involvement has mostly been in Illinois, although I did serve on the national committee for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years as well.
Yeah. And so what kind of incidents does TERT help out with? Do they respond to?
Yeah, there's a lot of variety. And I think, you know, obviously we're sitting here and talking about this, right, as Ida has impacted Louisiana. And that's really, you know, the hurricane responses is really the genesis of TERT. And it dates back to its roots in Florida and the Carolinas, and areas that were prone to major weather events like hurricanes. And that's really where it started. And then in 2005, when we saw Hurricane Katrina hit Louisiana, and a huge, huge mutual aid response for fire service and law enforcement. And here in Illinois, we sent hundreds of firefighters and stuff. And there were questions along the way of like, well, don't they need 911 help? And that just wasn't available. We didn't have a methodology to get 911 telecommunicators there. So significant weather events is one of the biggest things we've done, but really it's any large incident. Anytime a PSAP could be experiencing a personnel shortage where they need more people for either the size of the incident or things like that. Unfortunately, we also have done some of the harder deployments where we've been involved with an agency that's going through a line of duty death, and they need to get their staff out to grieve. And we've been able to come in and help out with that as well. So, you know, that's our—
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those double-edged things, right? Like, you don't wanna have to do it, but it's really great to help people in that time and be able to know that, you know, we have a system in place. You know, there's a couple things in a personnel shortage we don't do. We don't get involved in labor management issues. So if somebody's striking, or we don't get involved in that. And I will say, in Illinois, at the beginning of 2020, we didn't know what to do with COVID. And we kind of said, look, don't put TERT in your COVID response plan for if you all get sick, we're coming in, you know, because there was so much unknown in the beginning of 2020. But I mean, from there on, I mean, it's any large incident, things like that. And we also have had interesting partnerships in different states. In Illinois, we have a partnership with the Illinois Emergency Management Agency, and we have a little bit of what we call like a field communications component, where we're prepared and trained to send our personnel into the field. And that was our very first deployment. And that was in May of 2011. We sent personnel down to Southern Illinois, to the tip of our state, where the Mississippi and Ohio rivers come together, and the communities down there were seeing some extreme significant flooding. And we set up the first statewide incident communication center as part of the emergency management area-wide deployment. And we were down there for over 10 days handling incident communications as part of the emergency relief. And our second deployment was at the same time in 2011, where at the same time they realized that they had a PSAP, a 911 center in Massac County in Metropolis, Illinois, that needed help, didn't have enough people. The people were impacted by the emergency. Their homes were flooded. They were working too hard. And so we sent personnel to help with the Massac County Sheriff's Office dispatch as well. So those were our first two deployments here in Illinois. I know in other states, a lot of hurricane deployments are really some of the big ones. Because one, they're able to be planned for. You kind of see them coming, and then you know there's going to need help along the way.
Right.
But yeah, that's a lot of what we have done here.
That's fantastic. I will say, just quickly on a personal note, that how I became involved in TERT was actually from— we received assistance from you during a line of duty death incident. And that was my first experience interacting with TERT, and they came into my center and covered for our staff so we could attend the funeral. And it was incredible to be able to do that and know that our guys on the road, guys and gals, were still taken care of. So it's really cool that you guys are able to do stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. We think any way we can help is important. And again, while those situations are challenging and difficult, I mean, we're just glad to be able to help.
Yeah, I mean, I remember we came back from the funeral, I think the following day. We had the entire day off to attend the funeral. When we came back, the TERT members had left notes for us all over the center that were really, really sweet. And they were just like, we love you, we're here for you, stay strong. And we still have some of those notes up where they left them because they kind of hid them everywhere. So it was awesome to see to come back to that. That's how our agency and all of that initially became involved in TERT. And it's been a great experience ever since then. So we appreciate you.
That's
so
awesome.
Yeah, it was fantastic. But so you kind of went into this a little bit, but when you send a team out to assist in their agency and the team arrives, what are their main goals? I mean, because that's a lot to be taking on and different centers have different responsibilities.
Yeah, that's probably one of the most challenging things we have is no deployment is going to be exactly the same. So how we deployed with, you know, the Illinois Emergency Management Agency and the statewide deployment is very different than when we walk into a local 911 center and try to help them out. I mean, overall, in a perfect world, we're supplementing staff, meaning there's somebody with local knowledge there that we're just supplementing. When you think of the job, and I, you know, it's important I gave you what I currently am doing, but I'm always remiss if I don't start by saying I did start as a telecommunicator. So even though I've got the management title and I do all this management stuff, I was a 911 telecommunicator, and I did that in the south suburbs of Chicago in a busy little suburban police department. And the reality is that I believe strongly in that while all of our centers are different, there's so much commonality in what we do that if you can answer a 911 call, you can answer a 911 call anywhere. In other words, the who, what, when, where, how is the same. The call control techniques are the same. How you deal with a caller is the same. I can get the address and I can get the nature and I can get all that. Now, that's one part of it. Now, getting the help there, putting that in someone else's CAD system, putting that, you know, so that it's very, you know, dispatchable, so to speak, that sometimes is a little more challenging. It's one of the areas that we also struggled with in the beginning because we're like, well, you know, for example, you know, with Kaylee, you as a member, I mean, the issue is that, like, as a member, do I need to know what CAD you know how to operate, you know, or do we... But we've really gotten away from that. We've just kind of thought of, we go in and we help, and where we can call take is best and get it into CAD and then work to see. We've been in situations where we have been the only people in the PSAP and there haven't been local help there. But in those situations, there was usually not day-to-day activity going on. You know, so when you take away the day-to-day activity, it becomes a little easier to coordinate the resources. And you have to be willing to at some point almost kind of go into a pen and paper environment or a CAD down environment just to get the job done if all the technology is there. In other centers, we've been able to come in, enter stuff into CAD. I mean, we've done like, hey, here's a 45-minute CAD training of how to put a call in. Because at the end of the day, too, yeah, you're not going to be super proficient or whatever, but I mean, a CAD intake screen is pretty similar in most systems. I mean, again, it's the address, it's the nature. And, you know, if we get the event, you know, and we're doing these in imperfect conditions. So no one's expecting perfection of, you know, oh, well, you picked, you know, citizen complaint instead of suspicious circumstance. I mean, no one's looking at those details of what you're doing. You're getting the help to the people that need it, and that's the goal. And so we've been able to come in and do that. And that's in the PSAP. So again, call taking is the easiest thing. I feel that I could walk into any center in the country and answer a 911 call if I had to, with a pen and a paper, let's be clear. But then to take it to the next step, it just depends on the, you know, how long are we going to be there? What are we trying to do? You know, and those types of things where there's local people, it becomes a little more helpful, but you know, the longer we're there, we might be talking on radios again, push button and talk. I mean, somebody sets it up, right? It's not too hard. Somebody gives you a lineup. I mean, how different is it? Right. So if you got a lineup or if you got a number of, you know, the fire dispatch is probably the thing that gets a little confusing because some of us dispatch fire in the world of, y'all come, meaning you just tone out, the call, and then the units that want to go. Others of us are sitting there picking units. Well, I want medic one, truck three, you know. So depending on the dispatch world, all of that kind of plays into it as well. But definitely you can, a really good TERT telecommunicator with the right attitude can walk into another center and be helpful pretty quickly. And that's what we've seen nationally and here in Illinois.
Yeah. I would think the mindset is, how do we make it easier, right? That's the whole goal. How do we take the work away? So if writing it on paper and somebody else is able to enter it, as long as it's not creating more work or stress, then fantastic. I had that question in my mind. I'm glad you touched on it because I'm like, how does this work? Like I get stressed thinking about, oh man, I got to sit down and figure out this CAD quick and make it easy, because that's what we're there for, right? Is to make it easy for people. So, I mean, it sounds like you guys got it nailed down pretty well.
Right. And I would say this, I mean, so when I talk to agencies that want to get involved and they're like, well, how do you pick the people and stuff? I do think, you know, as a putting a manager hat back on as a manager, I got to sit here and make sure I got the right type of telecommunicator in this role and assignment. And again, you know, normally it's who wants to do this. That's step one. And then, you know, do you really screen or limit? The joke I always make when we're training is, you know, you're not just supposed to send us the people that you want to get out of your center. You want to send us the people that are going to be most helpful in someone else's center.
Right. Yeah. Right? The people who are actually going to do this correctly.
Right. And again, to be honest, I mean, there are people that could be your best dispatchers that might not be the best TERT dispatchers, because we all know different types of personalities and everything else. You have to be a flexible person to do this. You can't be the black and white dispatcher. And some of our best telecommunicators out there are like black and white. I know the rule. I know what to do. I know how to do this. I know what to do. And they're awesome in that setting. This has to be the one that can think outside the box, that any individual that's more flexible to be able to work in a different environment, to sit somewhere else, doesn't have to have their chair, you know, those types of things that we all see in the workplace, you know, that's the important type of stuff when you're picking a TERT telecommunicator, is that they're able to work in that environment and adapt well. And again, you know, I think this, and I don't say it enough to my own employees, but, you know, I know everyone here in my agency, everyone that has the job of telecommunicator at least has the number one purpose of helping people, right? Everything else, all the stress, all the morale issues, everything else, I know people are here to help people. So if you take that core thing, you take the individual that's that core skill of, I just want to help people, they can thrive in an environment like this, because it is the chaos that we like, and it is all of those things. And man, I've just always been amazed when people just buckle in and sit down and can do that, whatever's asked of them.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think you're not going to be looking for the dispatcher that sits down and does everything perfectly by the book every time. You're looking for the one that functions really well under duress. Like when nothing is going correctly, this dispatcher can still make sure that someone is responding to this call. That's the end of the story.
Well, and that they're not the tunnel vision approach, because, you know, we talk about that a lot in other trainings I do and stuff. But like, if things don't work, they're the ones that are going to overcome it. They're the ones, they're not going to get stuck on hit enter again, and maybe the fourth time it's going to work. You know what I mean? Right. And I get it. And that's not anything negative to those individuals, because those individuals are very reliable in the normal world and stuff. But yeah, this is somebody that's got to be flexible outside their normal comfort zone that can sit there and do it. You know, sometimes there are people who have some sense of first responder experience that have maybe been outside the communication center. That's nothing that we look for, but I do get some of those people drawn to this. I get the people, I think like you're saying, that are just, you know, if a tornado is bearing, you know, bearing down in your area, they're the ones standing up going, let's go, we got this, you know, and that's who I need on a TERT team deploying.
Yeah, we have recently even we've had some significant weather here. And I always like being in the center when that's happening. And every other person that's in there with me is like, what is wrong with you? Why would you want to be here right now? And I'm like, yeah, because this is when I do my best work, man. This is this is where I live, is in this area where none of the radios are working, and we lost power, and you know, half of our phone lines are down. But we got it. We're good. Everyone's fine. No one's died. Like, everything's okay.
Yeah, a coworker and I were talking the other day about how we feel we're in our best mode when the shit's hit the fan. You know, not when there's nothing happening, but when there's chaos, we feel that we thrive really well in that. So I look forward to that also.
Yeah, yeah, when there's nothing going on, your brain is shriveling up because you're bored.
Well, we talk about that when we hire a telecommunicator is, you know, and I've interviewed hundreds of people over my career for this job, this profession. And, you know, the thing is, you know, I do believe the best telecommunicator is one that can be sitting there half asleep, struggling to pay attention. And then we go from 0 to 100 and their hair's on fire and they're like, bring it, let's go. You know, and I've got a rooms full of them here in my center and it's awesome. And I know there's, I mean, I've met so many across the country. It's that's the best part about training people is you get to meet all these people all around and you kind of know, you see who's got that attitude. And we see it a lot in the people involved in TERT.
Yeah, that's awesome. So now that we've said all these wonderful, amazing things about TERT and the great work that they do, how does an agency join?
Yeah, so this is different on a state-by-state basis. Right. So, you know, the very first thing is, you know, outside of Illinois, if you're looking to do this, look to see if you have a state group. And there's the National Committee is the National Joint TERT Initiative, and they got a website, njti-tert.org. And I'm sure you guys can put that. I'll send the link to you. You guys can put it on your stuff. But that kind of tells you where states are, who's got active chapters and stuff like that. Again, Florida, extremely active. Texas is active. Tennessee is active. Georgia is active. South Carolina, North Carolina, Illinois. I mean, there's a lot of active chapters and groups out there that are ready to go. There are others that have a lesser degree of activity. And then there's other states that are just still trying to get going. So no matter where you are in the country, look to see who's running it. If you don't know, check with your local APCO or NENA chapters and see if they know whether you have TERT or not. In Illinois, our rule is that your agency has to join. So your agency has to become a member of TERT for you to become a TERT team member yourself. And we do that because we got, you know, formal intergovernmental agreements and all this. We're a real entity. We're an entity that has a board and people engaged in it. And so we're supported by the Illinois APCO and NENA chapters. And they've helped us out over the years, as well as the other statewide mutual aid organizations like ILEAS in Illinois, which is the law enforcement mutual aid. They've supported TERT in a variety of different ways back when there used to be grant money and things like that. So that's how you get involved. And so most time your agency has to be a member, or at least even in some other states, they have to sponsor you. So even one way or the other, somebody's got to support you to be a part of it because of how you deploy. Things like IDA going on now, I've not been made aware, at least no request came to Illinois for telecommunicators for the hurricane. They may have gone to other states, but if there had, I mean, that goes through something called the EMAC, the Emergency Management Assistance Compact, which was a little bit in the news. It's not through FEMA. So like TERT doesn't deploy through FEMA or something like that. We deploy state to state mutual aid, meaning Louisiana calls up and says, hey, can anyone send us telecommunicators? And states can respond. And they actually respond in a weird way. We respond and actually say, here's how much it costs for you to get here, so many telecommunicators and all that. And then those costs are paid by the requesting state. So that's how your agencies, if you're ever sent out of state, which could be like, we've never done that in Illinois yet, but it's possible. You could be sent for 14 days and have to travel somewhere, but your agency gets reimbursed for your time and all of that. And that's through EMAC. So, but yeah, the simple answer is you're in Illinois, your agency has to join TERT, and then you have to be selected and trained as a TERT member.
And then is there a cost associated with that? Does an agency have to pay to be a member?
No, no cost associated with it. You know, other than potentially, I mean, the costs are there if you're looking at, like, you know, you send somebody to a training class or you send someone to, you know, a regional mutual aid. Like when we're doing the line of duty death stuff, those aren't reimbursement situations. Somebody's got to be willing to send people, and it's usually on overtime to help out. And, you know, gratefully, that's not a very hard choice for anyone in public safety. And most agencies have no problem doing that. But those are the types of costs. Just support your people. In a huge deployment, statewide deployments, EMAC deployments, those costs are reimbursed, so they're even less. Right. But there's no membership fee. There's no, okay, you know, you got to buy this uniform or whatever, all that kind of stuff.
Okay. What about, what about equipment, Brian? Do you guys take equipment out? Are you using equipment on scene? You know, like, obviously, EMA, a lot of them have an amazing trailer that they take someplace, or radios and all that stuff. Do you guys go out with your own equipment, or are you just using
them? Great question. So, I mean, from Illinois' point of view, and I do think this varies state to state, is we originally had started issuing people like gear bags and vests and stuff like that. And they had like a yellow safety vest, really exciting thing. And they had like a gear bag that they could throw their stuff in. And we had regional equipment like Pelican cases that had laptops and stuff like that. But again, we started in 2005, and those 1990, you know, those Windows 98 laptops, no longer so good. They're probably sitting in some Pelican cases still. And we have some, you know, early generation digital trunk radios lying around in those cases. So we're sort of at the end. When we look to get more money to re-outfit ourselves, we kind of went to where your question was leading, which is wherever we're asked to go, there's going to be stuff there, right? So then we just kind of went off the thing. Instead of TERT buying it, you know, if it's PSAT to PSAT mutual aid, what do we need? You know, I mean, bring a headset. If it plugs in, great. If not, you're using the headsets there, right? So, and, you know, in a building, the vest is less important to begin with. So you don't really need much. You don't need a lot of equipment to go to a 911 center and work in someone else's 911 center. To go into the field, you need more equipment. You may need radios, may need all that, but it's usually there. I mean, that's what happens is you see this in big incidents all the time where they set up command vans, they bring out huge vehicles and all this. And then the question I always ask is, well, who's sitting behind the radio? Oh, we got chiefs over here and stuff. And it's like, chiefs, why don't you put people there that do this for a living, that talk on the radio, talk on the phone for a living, and put us there? And I'm also a huge proponent of tactical dispatch, which is not always TERT, but a very similar thing, which is telecommunicators have a role in the field, because if you need to monitor a radio channel, it's kind of like what you guys do, right? So that's what we do. That's who should be doing it. We shouldn't, you know, you don't give the sniper rifle to the guy that's never fired it before, or, you know, on a SWAT situation, you give it to the sniper, right? So if you're going to have a radio there, give it to the people that talk on the radio. That's my attitude when it comes to tactical dispatch. And I think it flows right into TERT as well. And again, in Illinois, we had 17, and it's up to 21 unified command posts that were purchased post September 11th, post Katrina, that were outfitted with communication. Some of them have been deployed for quite some time. They're aging vehicles now, but at the time they had two position communication suites. And as we were developing TERT, we were like, well, we can staff those. So we can be the people that go into those huge vehicles that are all around the state and have communication capabilities. And that's where we think we can be in the field. And then obviously in a PSAP, you're just sitting down in someone's council, you know?
Yeah, that's easy enough, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's easy enough, right? Just
you can just sit down anywhere and do your job,
easy peasy,
right?
No problem. just jump right in.
So what kind of training is required for an agency or a telecommunicator? Do you have to be EMD certified? Is that a requirement?
Well, great question overall for the training. EMD, let me come back to the initial training is you've got to have all the NIM stuff, you know, that really excited FEMA online training. We got to check all the boxes and make sure you got 100, 700, 800, 200 and have all those online classes out of the way. The TERT awareness of class is also there. So anyone out there listening to this, you can go to the FEMA Online Institute training and take IS 144, and that's the TERT awareness class. So you can go take that class, and that's the minimum requirements we have for Illinois. And then the only thing we do in Illinois is we add a field communications class, which is generally an in-person class, but in this, you know, post-2020 world, we'll do it online. We'll do an instructor-led online, like a Zoom call, and we'll do a class that way as well. And that's just teaching the field component, but going out in the field and building on what's in the TERT awareness class. So those are the minimum requirements. When it comes to things like emergency medical dispatch, I mean, we want to know what certifications you have. We want to know which system you use. And so if you're priority dispatch trained, we're going to know that in your file. We're going to note that and have that on your information, because we have had some requests where like, hey, we use this protocol. But again, why are we coming? You know, and I'm one of the last people to ever say you should cancel EMD and stuff, because I think it's so important to provide pre-arrival instructions. But again, why are we coming? What's going on? And is this the most important thing we need to worry about, is that you're certified in this? Or again, is there someone in the room that's certified? If you are, great. If you aren't, I mean, like my staff, we're PDC customers. So if we went to a center that was APCO, and we know how to do EMD and we haven't read those cards before, could we figure it out? Yeah. Is there increased potential liability if we're winging it? Potentially, but why are we there, right? So in the most of those situations, it's a mitigation of risk and you decide what's more important, you know? And again, those become conversations that I have or the other coordinators have when we set up a deployment. What do you need? You know, what do you really need? What do you expect of us? And then how do we, and we say, well, we can do that, we can't do that. You know, we just have to have very honest, quick conversations when it comes to a deployment.
Well, yeah, in an emergency situation, I mean, the worst thing you could possibly do is nothing. So as long as someone's on the phone sending help, you've got your liabilities covered there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you know, when it comes to EMD, I mean, we've thought about it, and I'm not sure where we currently are. I mean, we the one challenge we have with TERT overall, and specifically, definitely here in Illinois, but I think everyone, is it's sort of at this level where it's really for really big things and we don't use it on a regular basis. And so what does that mean? That means here we are, we've been an active team and deployed since 2011, and we've only deployed maybe six times. So you have something that's been going for 15 years and or plus, you know, and almost 15 years, and you've only deployed six times. It's hard to keep the momentum. It's hard to keep the excitement. It's hard to keep the interest, the training. It's hard to know who my members are, because I've trained 200 and some people. I don't know if you guys know this. Some centers turn over people, you know, there's a little turnover of personnel in our industry.
No.
So I know, I imagine it's a shock to you and your listeners to know there's turnover.
No, dispatchers are known for their longevity at their centers. Yeah. What are you talking about?
I know, but we look at that and we know who are your members today, and have we trained your current members? And again, you know, do they still have their vest? All that kind of silly stuff that we try to track. But that's probably our hardest challenge, is keeping the enthusiasm and keeping people engaged. And what we're going to embark on this year at our conference, our state conference, is putting a class out and trying to re-excite our members in Illinois and try to, you know, do this. Because again, we don't know when we're going to be needed next, you know, and I think there's a lot of times where we could have helped and people didn't ask for help. I mean, we've had two significant multi-day fires in our state this year that probably both jurisdictions could have benefited from additional staffing that we could have provided. But we're a resilient group, right? Like, so 911, we're like, oh, you know, we don't think we need help. We're getting everyone else's help. We're going again, because we thrive on chaos and everything you guys already talked about. We're a group of people that, you know, like to be like, we got it. Well, yeah, okay, I'm sure we do. I'm sure 911 centers all across the country can handle way more than people think. and do when it's needed. But would it be nice to have one or two more people in the room that could help you out? You know, I mean, that's the way I look at it. Is it
even just to rotate around and let people take a 10-minute break?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I think we need to normalize the request, make people realize that the request is easy to make, especially if you're a member, and don't be afraid to ask. And then also, and not to jump ahead on some of the things that I know we're looking to cover, but I mean, you know, we need people to do drills. We need people to involve us in drills. So there's always, all across the country, there's always teams doing their NIMS required drills, their state, their local drills, regional drills, cooperation, mutual aid exercises. Well, engage us in that, and then everyone will see the value we have, right? So if your local TERT teams can come out and be a part of that, those types of activities, then it helps provide value. And we have done some. I mean, obviously the last 18 months have sort of stopped a lot of drills and activities. So we look forward to the resumption of those probably in 2022. We'll get stuff going again and get people into the field. And I think that will also be important because, again, we've done some of those things and we've gotten people that have been able to respond and go to like downstate and go to like big drills with ILEAS or Mavis or something, and they see a lot of value. But, you know, if we haven't done them for a couple of years, we're losing that touch. We're losing that excitement, that engagement, and everything else.
Absolutely.
I feel like so many departments, we do so many things that are, it's better to have it and not need it than to need it and not have it, right? That's how police departments, fire departments, they have all this equipment that they use once every 7 years, maybe on a random thing, but they spent the money on it because that one in a million chance that it's going to come up, they need it. And
right.
I feel like this is the attitude people have to have when it comes to something along these lines. You know, you have to, yes, I agree with you. You got to be in their face and showing them and reminding them, hey, we're still here in case you need it. But to not pay attention to it, I feel like it's I don't know, oversight, I guess, you know, they just, I don't know how they forget about something like that, but.
It is, I think, because I think people, you know, people don't realize what they need until they don't have it, like you were just saying. And yeah. One of these big incidents happens and then months later, they're like, shit, what were we doing? Why didn't we do this?
Right. Yeah, TERT was born out of after action reports. Let's be clear. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it was all the after action reports that started saying, hey, we need to improve communications. We need communicators. You know, and so the one thing we do in Illinois that has helped us is we have relationships with like the state communications department, and we sit on some of the committees and we have our leadership in our team engage with those groups. And that's how we got our first deployment, you know, was dealing with people that are COMELs at the state level on the state IEMA that know what we can do and having those relationships. And really the, you know, the April 2011 flooding, I was dialed in. And I mean, I literally got a phone call on a Saturday morning and, you know, I'd been in conversations with people that were at the state emergency operations center all week, but then I get the official phone call, you know, and it was a gentleman by the name of Alan, and Alan called me on my cell, and I was downtown with my family at a zoo with little kids, and he's like, this is your official request. And that was probably at like 11 in the morning on Saturday, and I was 6 hours away downstate on my way downstate at 4 o'clock the next morning. We were on the road. So, I mean, again, we're not an immediate deployment. We're sort of like gather everyone together and go. But, you know, I ended my day downtown, got on the phone with my key coordinators and leaders in the organization. And yeah, went to bed, and then got up at 4 a.m. and started driving. And we were down there before noon the next day. So less than 24 hours to respond across the state. And get a team in place. And that was, you know, that's where we proved a lot of success. But again, are those people at the state still there? We need to get in front of everyone else again and let them all know, hey, we can still do that, you know?
Yes. And if you are a field responder that's listening to this, firefighter, police officer, please get your dispatchers involved in these incidents and in these drills, because you would be amazed at how we can perform when we're given the right circumstances to do so. I think chiefs and battalion chiefs and sergeants, like police sergeants and stuff, are always impressed, like, oh, I didn't realize you guys had that capability. Well, you never asked.
Right.
We can do so much for you guys.
Well, yeah. I was going to say, in my agency, the most active tactical dispatch we have three levels of tactical dispatch. We have TERP members, we have tactical dispatch team members, and then we have merit SWAT team members, which is the DuPage County SWAT team. And those are our most active tactical dispatchers. The SWAT team people train and deploy regularly, and they're out there in the field pretty often. And at least that's, they're adding value to those large incidents. And that's where a lot of tactical dispatches across the country is tied to SWAT teams and things like that. And while not part of TERT, it's still the same, adding value to the telecommunicator position and adding value to the field by providing communications. So I think it's great.
I think it's great too. You don't see, it's very, I'll say frustrating when you see agencies like yours that have dispatchers involved with those incidents, with those groups, with those teams, and you can't, you know, you can't get your own agency or, you know, other agencies to buy into the fact that there's value in what you're actually doing. And I think right now, even more so, it's impressive that you guys are able to do it because you're a consolidated center. So like our agency where Brendan and I work, you know, prior to last year, we always went to roll call with our people. We had a personal relationship for the most part with a lot of our people. Now, since COVID, we don't go to roll call, so we don't see them. And personally, I believe there's less of a personal relationship with a lot of these people. We've talked about this before. So you guys don't have that same relationship as a whole. And they bought into it and said, this is a great idea and let's make this happen. How the hell do you get the other people to understand it? That's what I've been trying to figure out for the long.
Well, I think a lot of it is awareness. And again, I'd have to switch hats, but in NENA, we have a tactical dispatch class that I've been one of the key people involved in developing. And one of the things we hope to do is we hope to make one more of a tactical dispatch awareness class and then more of one for everything else. Because I get two kinds of students. I either get a student that's actually doing it, they're already a tactical dispatcher and they're already doing, they just want to learn how to be better at their job. Or I get the people that are like, I'd like to start a program. And I got a slide for either case, right? Like, what do you want to do? And so a lot of times I just look at the class on any given day and I figure out what do I have more of? And that's where we aim the class that day. And again, the relationship building is the key part, is that, you know, if you're part of a PSAP that has a SWAT team, either in-house or regionally or whatever, you need someone on that SWAT team to recognize the value and then carry that torch forward with that team, because we can't invite ourselves to calls, right? Like, we can't get ourselves out of our chairs and we don't, you know, just show up. And even in Illinois, I mean, I'd argue, you know, especially when I talk about those two large fire incidents, I mean, to be honest, I'm not the one, I don't like calling people and be like, hey, this is Illinois TERT, do you need us? I mean, when we can, we've done some of that and we've reached out and been like, let us know if there's anything we can do. But in general, I don't want to be the one calling a PSAP in the middle of an emergency going, hey, what are you guys doing? You know, yeah. I mean, I don't want to be that. Yeah, I don't want to be that person. So when I know, like, maybe if I know that PSAP well, and I know that I can call an admin or a personal cell phone number and not the center, you know, there have been times where I've texted people and been like, hey, let me know if you need us, that kind of stuff. But we're not always out there pushing ourselves. And we can't do that with tactical dispatch either. You can't push people to be like, hey, let us go. And a lot of times I think people just don't know what are the capabilities. And, I'll give a shout out. My best story on that is when we were starting up our program here, a telecommunicator that's now pretty well known across the country, Matt Grogan, he's involved with the Denise Amberlee Foundation and does training all over across the country. Matt used to work with us at my agency, and he was, we sent us a group of telecommunicators when we were looking to start up our tactical dispatch team, and they went to a fire department for a May Day drill. We all know what a May Day firefighter drill is. It's a firefighter, you know, calling a May Day and declaring an emergency, right? So it was pretty obvious what the outcome of the drill was going to be, right? And we were not having a role. We were just watching at a drill to figure out how could tactical dispatch, where could we plug in? What could we do? Where do we engage, right? So we're there, and they do our first responders do awesome training, man. I mean, they make this so realistic. They had a smoke tower going, everything else, and they start looking at stuff. And what happens? The call comes out on the radio. Command missed the call, and here's Matt, professional dispatcher, and he taps the chief on the shoulder. Hey, you just got a mayday call. And right then and there, our program was launched, because it was like, the chief's like, I can't believe I missed it. And the guy standing behind me heard it. Why? Because you're looking at the fire, because that's what you do. He's listening to the radio, because that's what he does. And that's how our tactical program here really became successful. And then we launched, and it's weighing down. I mean, you know, again, it takes momentum, it takes excitement. And I'll admit, you know, again, shifting priorities, growth, everything else, we're sort of on a downside where we don't go out as often. Our agencies don't request us, but there was a period of time where we were, you know, and staffing and all those other things become factors. But I'm just glad we've been able to maintain the SWAT team portion and everything else. And we are there. If we had a big incident, we'd figure out a way to be involved.
I think that's good, because like you said, they're using them quite a bit. And so it's always there. It's always in their face. I think my solution is going to be, I'm going to buy a pickup truck. I'm going to lift it, put big tires on it, wrap it, and it's going to say Norm Gann, tactical dispatcher, in big yellow letters. And I'm just going to roll up to the scene and go, where you need me. I think that's how we're going to get them to buy into it.
Yeah, that might work. I'll also, you know, I'll go with the more, I'm not going to say it won't work, Norm, but I'll go with the more judicious approach of find the member on your SWAT team that understands your mission, and then have them talk to people at other SWAT teams in the area or around the state and know this. I mean, our personnel go to ITOA conferences here in Illinois, which are the Tactical Officer Association conferences. There's ways to get involved, and you just have to find a cheerleader. And once you find your cheerleader, then you can get forward progress. And again, start by asking, can we come to a training? And you can do that under like, you can do that sneakily. You can just be like, dispatch needs to see the training. You might get invited, and they don't know your ulterior motive is trying to figure out how to get tactical dispatch created, you know? But I mean, we should see training. Every telecommunicator should be out there looking at what happens in the field and seeing the training that happens. Cause I'm a big believer in that the job became more easier for me once I saw the other side of the radio.
I know for us, for our agencies, a few years ago, we went and did, we specifically went with our fire departments to do a ride along to talk about water rescues, because water rescues are a big thing in our area. We have a lot of them every year. And we specifically went on this ride along to talk to each of our fire departments about what we could do to help them during those incidents. And holy cow, do those incidents run so much more smoothly now, genuinely, just because we asked, like, how can we make this easier for you? Is there something else that because we're just sitting in a room,
right?
You know, you guys are the ones that are diving and out on the boat, and like, we're just sitting behind the console panicking, basically. Like, there's nothing physical. So what can we do? How can we help you? And we now have like a whole routine that we go through with those to try to help them and get all of this information for them, so that we can find the victim. So even just going up to your agencies and saying, like, how can we make your job easier when you guys are on these incidents?
Well, and you know, your 911 phase two locations, rapid SOS integrations, if you've got it, those types of things, and paying attention to the map, that's the type of data that the first responders need, because especially on the water, where was the first 911 call received? Because location, 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 right, is the most important thing in a water rescue situation. As you know, I spent a small time of my career up near your agency. And I remember one of our first phase two calls was in the wintertime on a frozen lake. And my staff did a great job of, like, you know, it was a round lake, and it was a situation where, you know, one call was received at one end, one call was received at the other end, and we basically figured out where to tell them to go by, this is the middle of the calls for help, we're at these addresses, and they went in the middle, and they walked right, like, out to the person. I mean, it was right. Amazing, just by looking at where the 911 calls were coming at the time.
Yeah, even with the rapid SOS integration has been awesome, because we were able to, I was able to send a screenshot of every point on the map that phone call had plotted at during, and we kept the caller on the phone for like half an hour, even after the responders were already there. So we were able to send him a screenshot of that map where all the points had plotted. And we were like, here you go. Here's everywhere that phone ever was.
Right. And that's huge. So no, that's great. And I mean, and you know, I wear a hat where I'm the director and all that, and that comes with what it comes with. But I mean, I'm always looking for ideas, and people, I think, you know, no one can predict what your supervisors and managers are going to say, or what the chiefs and bosses say, and how that works in any agency. But I can say most people like ideas when ideas, you know, when, if you can bring me an idea to solve a problem, that's an easy thing to say yes to. You know, bring me a problem, then I got to figure out the answer. Bring me the solution, I can say yes to the solution.
Yeah.
And I think we always need to empower our telecommunicators and people in the organization to keep that in mind and let people know, here, this is what I think we could do. Because when you come up with ideas like you did about, hey, let's address this issue with our first responders, it leads to better outcomes.
Right.
So that's great.
Exactly. Well, really quick, I did want to touch on this because this is such an interesting aspect of TERT that was, I believe it's a more recent thing. Can you tell us a little bit about what a virtual deployment is?
Yeah, no, great. So here in Illinois, we're fortunate. We have a statewide radio network, and a lot of states around the country do, but not everyone. And we have a statewide digital trunk radio network that's a public-private partnership. And it means that those radio channels are available in any communication center that has that equipment. And one thing that's hard to do is move people around, right? It's hard to say, hey, we got flood operations going on, and we need somebody to listen to radio traffic and come down to this command post, right? And a lot of times, if depending on the midsize of the event, we were struggling with what to do. Do we deploy, not deploy? A couple of years ago, we had a flooding event. And again, through our relationships with the Illinois Emergency Management Agency, they sort of figured out that what they really needed, they had daytime coverage through volunteers and the radio groups and stuff, but they needed overnight radio coverage. And someone came up, I don't think it was me, but someone came up with the idea of, could we just do this out of a PSAP? And the question was then sent out to our TERT members of, who of you have the interoperable radio channels on your council? And we found out many people did. And what we did is we did nightly, we were able to have TERT members in their center listen and be responsible for the radio traffic that we needed to log and be there for safety reasons and tracking reasons. We were able to do that, and we were able to rotate that without anyone having to leave their center. Now, we asked people to kind of like unplug, so to speak, unplug them from regular duties and dedicate them to this deployment. And even in my center, we're like, dedicated, but you know, you can answer a phone if you have to. It's a pretty quiet radio channel, but not have another radio responsibility at least. And we were able to do that. I think we did it for like 4 or 5 nights. And it was great because we got to share the deployment, meaning not just one agency sitting there taking it all on. And we were able to, I think you even split it. I think we split the shift into 2 parts again to let people split their personnel and get more people involved.
I think
and
it was like 4-hour shifts or
something. Yeah, like 4-hour blocks. Yeah, because sometimes we just do that to allow more people to get the practice, right?
Right,
yeah. And so it worked really well. And it may be a model for how we can support field operations around the state when they're on those frequencies. We can support them anywhere without having to put people in, you know, drive people down and stay in a motel or something like that to be communicators, which adds to expense and everything else. And it also made it easier for the agencies, because it's easier for you to say yes to deploying people if they're still in the room. Because again, we asked them to be, you know, like unplugged to be able to do this extra work, but we knew they would, you know, if your center was busy, you'd still be able to have, you wouldn't lose the support completely. So I think that's a possibility. I think, you know, COVID kind of showed us there's a lot of ways to do stuff. You know, we've seen virtual 911 centers in the last 18 months as well. So there's a lot of ways we could do stuff in the future. And as we get through IP radio and newer technologies, next generation 911, I mean, you know, I think what you may see is, and this is a novel idea, but I'll throw it out there, but Charleston, South Carolina, you know, is a 911 center that can be impacted by hurricanes. They have a hurricane approach. They might, in a next generation 911 world, they could send all their calls to my center in Illinois. And I could sit there and have their CAD and have people staffing and taking that call from 5 states away. It's possible
right.
to get to that level of interoperability and technology so that you're, you know, and more likely to be an inland city in South Carolina. But the point being that you could actually transfer calls anywhere and transfer radio communications anywhere and have somebody, you know, back you up in a backup center, you know. So I think that's a thing to watch for the future. It's a thing to watch for next generation 911 and other technologies. And again, a way that we can help each other, especially during those big incidents, big events.
Right, especially during weather incidents, because if you're asking for a TERT deployment for flooding, you might not have a center available for TERT to come sit in.
Right.
You know, you might not have an area at all. And it's so cost effective because there's no, you know, if you already have the radio channel and maybe they don't even need you to utilize their CAD, like the deployment you were just talking about where we were just kind of listening to radio chatter.
It was a pen and paper deployment, I think.
Right.
I
mean, it's literally, you know, just you're just sitting there for 4 hours and the only cost there is your time. And you could even ask volunteer if someone wants to come in for 4 hours just to get the experience. So extremely cost effective. And the technology is awesome.
Right. I don't think the idea of it going to a different area, not even within the state, outside of the state, is that far-fetched, because when you think about how bad it is, like in California with wildfires or anywhere out there, and it's taking up so much space, your resources are depleted, especially when it comes to any kind of response or dispatch. So to me, to have somebody across the border in Arizona or Nevada that can take that stuff on, I don't think that's that far-fetched, even going right outside the state or even halfway across the country if it was that necessary. But you know, we see those major incidents that are long-term and ongoing. I could see where that would be handy and dare I say relieving, you know, seriously, because you're already taxed, you know, and if you can take some of that weight off and put it on somebody else that is able to take it, then to me, it's kind of a no-brainer, but that's just Norm's opinion.
Well, and no doubt that agencies have to evaluate their continuity of operation plans. They have to evaluate their evacuation plans, backup contingencies, and make sure they've got it. I mean, backup and backup centers and stuff, there's not all 6,000 911 centers across this country are created equal. We don't all have great places to walk into and run our backup operations out of. They don't all have, you know, it's not like we flip a switch and it's perfect. So, I mean, there's a lot of disparity among systems and centers, and yeah, having a better plan for that's helpful. But the first step, I mean, like we were talking about, just being able to virtually do an incident from somewhere else is a great ability. And it is, I think, something that will be evolving with technology in the future and hopefully in a positive way then.
So when there is a call for additional telecommunicators, when there's a TERT call out, are agencies required to send people, or is it just based on, because I mean, obviously we were just talking about over a lot of centers are short staffed and maybe don't have extra personnel to send out. So what happens if an agency is not available to send someone to a TERT deployment?
And this is one of the things we always want to educate people on, is that I'm not aware of any state, and definitely not Illinois, where there's a requirement. In other words, our recommendation is, you know, if you can't go, just say you can't go, and that's that. I mean, we want people to be able to send people. We want to be able to fulfill deployments, but we're not pushing hard. I think one of the other issues comes into when an agency joins. I often get a question like, how many people should I train? And I have a rule that I've sort of made up with my own experience of just, you should train 3 times as much as you could ever send. So if you're a smaller center and you can only ever send one person, then you should train 3 people to be a TERT member. If you're a medium center and maybe you get 2 people out the door, then train 6 people, right? And it's a very simple formula, but that's how I think that agencies should look at it. Because again, if you took 25 people at your center and said, all 25 of us are gonna be TERT capable, then I don't know. I look at it as were you selective about who's the best person to go outside your center?
Right.
B, where's the incentive of being a TERT member? Where's the motivation and things like that for the employees? And what's the realistic ability? I mean, most of those people will never go anywhere because it's hard to even get a couple people out the door at any given center. So I look at it like that. I mean, my center, we're larger. We have the ability. We think we could probably, on certain days, we could send 4 people out the door if we had to. So we've got 12 people, I think, on our team, you know, because my rule of thumb there. So
that's awesome.
It's very scientific.
Yeah.
I like that scientific formula that you've come up with there.
I don't want people just trying to get that free vest, right?
Right. It is very stylish, I will say. Very
couture. I should have wore it. I didn't know we were going to have videos.
I was thinking, I have my bag in my car. I should have gone and grabbed it and put all my gear on.
Yeah.
We were joking about doing that for the virtual deployment since we weren't able to actually respond to the flooding. We were like, can we sit here in our rain boots and ponchos with an umbrella, even though we're not
sad at all. Not sad at all. I just picture you sitting there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No. Being a giant nerd. Yeah. So we touched a little bit about this. So some TERT teams do cross state lines then to help if needed. Obviously, that's far more active in areas that require it more often. So Louisiana and Texas.
Yeah, I know the Texas team is deployed out of state. I know the Florida team is deployed out of state. I think Georgia is deployed out of state. So yeah, there are teams that do it. I will tell you, I know that some teams have done it unofficially, like maybe not through the channels that should happen. I'm a big believer of the rules of like the EMAC deployment and stuff like that. So I do think you have to make sure that, again, this isn't, you know, we talk about it with fire mutual aid and stuff all the time, but, you know, we need to know who's showing up. They need to be asked to come. And, you know, that's the important part. But no, we definitely have had states that cross the state lines, and Illinois is preparing to be able to do that easier. It's really interesting. You're supposed to have like a package set up, like literally like a document that would say, like, what does it cost Illinois to have a TERT deployment out of state and how many people and all that. And we've been working with the Illinois Emergency Management Agency to develop that again, but the state has to ask for it too. So the requesting state has to know that getting 911 telecommunicators is an option. And there's just more education. I know in my career, I've been to one EMAC conference, Emergency Management Assistance Combat Conference, and we probably should be going to more. I mean, we should be out there and really making people aware of these organizations that are available. Because if you need the people at the state level to know, hey, I should be getting some, you know, if I need so many firemen, I need so many law enforcement, I need so many 911 telecommunicators.
Right. Exactly. Oh, that's awesome. And then, hold on. I'm looking at the questions because I think we sort of went off the cuff a little bit, which is fine. I mean, the biggest question, I think, and hopefully people are able to use this in some way, but how do we get more information on how to join? You said just go to your national joint initiative and see if they have a state site for you.
Yeah, go there and then you can go to the about page and you can see a lot of, what do they have? A TERT across the nation under about TERT on, and that tells you whether there's a state, and it should link you to information. It could link you to the state pages there. So far, it looks like that works for a lot of them. So that's one way to go. And then, you know, otherwise, I mean, you know, there's a lot of Facebook pages. There's a lot, you know, if you just search Facebook and everything else, there's a lot of things out there. So yeah, get involved. And, you know, if you're in Illinois, your agency can reach out to us, myself, or our state coordinator and get information that way. We're in a situation where we would love every 911 center in the state to be a member. It doesn't cost anything. You got to sign a document and then you can receive and provide mutual aid. That's what we're looking for.
Yeah. So even you guys that aren't EMD certified, Brendan and Norm, I'm looking at you. That was Brendan and Norm's kind of concern is because they're a police only agency. So they were wondering if you have to be EMS and fire certified, or if you can just be police only.
Yeah, you can be police only. We have fire only. I mean, again, we're going to look at all of that when we're filling a deployment and picking people to sit in chairs and stuff. But you definitely can be a member in Illinois. I don't know if other states have other requirements, but like if you answer, in my opinion, Brian's opinion, if you can answer a 911 call, you can be a TERT member. I mean, that's what I'm looking for. We'll figure the rest out when we get there.
Yeah, everybody has a role to play. I mean, that's the reality is when you get there, because you have no idea what you're walking into, it's no different than you know, the shit hits the fan in your own center, everybody's doing something different. Okay, you're on the radio, I'm getting municipalities if it's a big storm and trees are down all over the place. So it's just on a different scale in a different location. Everybody's going to have their role to fill and you just figure it out.
Yeah. And again, the role may not be as exciting as answering 911 calls or dispatching. When we went with the state, it was a very different mission. We were in a support capacity, but you know what? We do that as well. Every telecommunicator has some sort of support capacity for their agency of things like that. So, you know, I mean, and sometimes you're running papers, we're runners, we're getting information to different people and stuff like that. And then a big incident that meant like hopping out of our communications trailer and literally like running paperwork to different people in the compound to make sure everyone knew what they needed to know.
But, the carrier pigeons.
Yeah. Ever flexible, ever Gumby, you know, that's one of our mottos, right? We got to be flexible in our job. So
well, preaching to the choir there. Yeah, it takes, like you said, it takes a special person. And I'm sitting here going, okay, how many dispatchers are there in the state of Illinois? And out of those, how many actually are flexible enough to want to do something like this and roll with the punches? What, 1 in 40, maybe? Right. You know, so.
We were just talking about how, you know, half of our equipment's constantly broken at work. And I was just like, you know, I'd be amazed to see what we're capable of doing when we actually have everything that works correctly. Like, because we're able to do this with like just half of the consoles are down, right, or whatever the case may be, what would happen if everything worked correctly? It's a crazy thought.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's funny that you say that, because as Brian was talking before and he had mentioned Rapid SOS, and I, you know, it's only been around for how long now?
Couple,
you know,
years.
not yes, that, two not years. That long. And it's now incorporated into our mapping system automatically. So we don't have to have Rapid SOS open separately to do it. And when it's broken, you're like, where did it go?
What do we do?
And it's so much, if there isn't an agency out there, and I don't want to digress too much, but if there's an agency out there that's not using Rapid SOS right now, you need to get your ass on board and start.
What are you doing? Yeah. Because you're crazy. It's made our job 10 times easier.
Yep.
And it's free.
Yeah. It's free. Right?
And it's accurate. Like, hello.
But extremely accurate.
Anyway, I put my soapbox
over here. Digress. So, all right. Well, we appreciate you so much, Brian. Thank you so much for coming on. Did you guys have any other questions for him?
It was great to just sit here and listen, because I really don't know anything about it, to be honest with you. Like, a lot of the questions that Kaylee asked were from the list that I had. So so you answered all of them. I'm looking forward to trying to get our agency involved.
Yes.
I didn't even know that we had one until like 3 years ago at IPSTA. And I dragged our director over there. I'm like, look at this. Like, we need to be a part of this.
Yes, exactly.
I think our agency is an easy one to make it happen, but it's going to take somebody like you or me or whoever, you know, like Brian was saying, somebody good to take the ball and run with it, because, you know, the powers that be already are holding too many. They're already juggling too much. So it needs somebody else to grab it and run with it. And I think they would be very receptive to that. So. But thank you, Brian. It's awesome. It's funny.
Thank you so much.
You know, I actually live just down the road from your center, and I've never actually been there. So I need to. Yeah, someday I'll stop in there and.
It's nice. I was there for CMCP in April. It's nice.
Thanks. We're proud of it. We've been in this building for 3 years. We have a relatively new facility, and we put a lot into it. So yeah, but got great staff here doing great things.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you.
Awesome. Yes. Thank you so much, Brian. Again, if your agency is interested in joining, if you're interested in getting more information, please go online, look up the National TERT Initiative. If you're in Illinois, there is an Illinois TERT website that you can visit and see if you can get your agency involved.
Yes. Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, guys. We'll see you next time.
Thank you very much.